Welcome to the podcast. I am photographer Sid Caesar.
I am designer Dave Say.
And happy Monday, June 16th, 2014. It's a very lovely, lovely day outside.
It is a lovely day.
The weekend. Yesterday was like, it was the perfect day.
Was it the perfect
Sunday day? I wish every single day was like yesterday. Like, it was just warm enough that you could wear shorts, but there was this nice cool breeze.
Uh-huh.
It was just a beautiful day.
It was dad shorts day.
It was dad shorts day.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You own a pair of light blue plaid shorts.
I do not. I refuse to have plaid shorts. I will not wear plaid shorts of any kind. But we did take my dad to a new flea market down in Grafton, Massachusetts.
A new flea market?
Yeah. The guy that was next to us the week last week when we did our flea market in Salem, in Hollis. Where am I? There's a guy next to us, and he was selling, and at the very end, he walked over. He's like, so how'd you guys do when we were talking everything? And he was like, normally, he's like, I sell it to one in Grafton. He's like, I do really well. And we're like, Grafton? I haven't heard of that one. So Sarah immediately went online, and she found it. And she was like, it looks pretty big. So we took my dad down, and it was fairly large, and they had some pretty good stuff. We bought a bunch of movies. You can't beat Criterion movies for a dollar. Like, it's just awesome. Like, just an awesome time to buy movies.
Yeah.
So we bought some, there was a couple of Criterions we bought, and then Sarah bought all kinds of little like tchotchke things, like a little brass owl, and she brought this like little measuring square. And
what's a measuring square?
Like a, it's not a, it's like a T-square, only it's like a right angle. It's like it's got a handle, and then it has a measure thing on the right hand side.
Oh, okay. Yep.
With measurements on it. And it was old. And she bought this cool little thing that she put her like her tea bags on when she's having tea, and mm-hmm. and then she bought this like 1957 era little travel pop up clock, alarm clock.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it was awesome because it was like complete in the box, and the prices were really good. Like, she was looking up all the stuff she bought this morning, and she was like, oh, she's like, this was like $20 on eBay. She's like, I got it for $4. She's like, we have to go back to that place.
Where's Grafton? That's in Mass someplace?
Yeah, it's next to Upton. It's about 58 minutes away, according to GPS.
Oh, okay.
So it was kind of nice. So we'll have to go there. There was one woman that had something I kind of wanted, but she wouldn't haggle with me.
Yeah.
And it was a mouse guard. It was a mouse guard collection.
Oh.
David Peterson does these mouse guard books, which are like medieval knights and stuff, but it's all mouse world. And they had the first edition. It's a 12 by 12 hardback. And it's like these deluxe editions that come in a hard sleeve and everything like that. And it's all black and white instead of color.
Huh.
And some of the pages are done in vellum.
Ooh.
And they were like $99.95 when they came out.
Yeah.
And she had it. And I don't know. The second one is out currently for $100. She had the first one. But the slipcase itself was just like beat to hell. And she wanted 15, and I should have jumped on it, but I was trying to talk her down to 10, and she just wouldn't come down. And she was just like, I know you're just going to take this and turn around and sell it. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to sell it, because I'm the only person that probably recognized like what it was, because it was just in, like, it doesn't tell you what it is on the cover, but it has this little sword symbol.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that looks like a mouse guard sword.
Yeah.
And she was like, it is. But I was just like, eh, and she just wouldn't. She was like telling me, like, she was telling me what I was going to do with it, and that was kind of turning me off.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll give you 10. And she's like, you're just going to take this and sell it on eBay and get $60 for it.
Why doesn't she do that?
So I was like, I was like 13, and she was just like, she's like, I don't want anything less than $15. I'm like, all right, well, I tried.
Yep.
You can tell me which way I'm going to walk as I leave, lady.
You have issues with authority.
Jeez. Tell me what I'm going to do.
You're not my mom.
You don't own me. So that was nice. And then we just spent the rest of the day. We took the cat. We've been slowly weaning the cat, taking her outside.
Oh, yeah?
Because Yoshi's always been an indoor cat.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we wait until she's like 16 years old to start doing this. And the biggest thing, she doesn't like being in the little harness that wraps around her legs on her chest.
Yeah.
But we brought her out yesterday for about 15, 20 minutes, brought her out in the grass, and she kind of walks a little bit, and then she just kind of lays down. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just sensory overload. I think she's just like, what is everything?
Yeah.
And she's sniffing, and her tail is wagging, and she's like, ah! So we're going to try to do it a little at a time, and mm-hmm. we'll start giving her treats as we do it so that she associates the harness with treats. And
so then she'll run outside and get eaten by a honey badger.
So the dog will eat her.
So why are you doing this?
It's something we talked about for a long time, and we just never did it until recently. We're just like, all right, we're going to do it. Mm. And partially a guilt because we never took grommet outside either.
Oh.
So I'm like, well, we've got one cat left. They better do it now.
Did they want to go outside?
No, but they didn't know what outside was. They've always been indoor cats.
Yeah. I started leaving my patio door open, so it's on the deck. And my cats aren't jumpers, so they come out and they'll sit on the deck and kind of check things out. So that's been, I guess, their introduction to the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem perfectly content to be inside.
Yeah.
They don't ever go for the door.
Huh.
The male cat is more outgoing.
Yeah.
So when the doorbell rings, he'll run toward the door to see who it is.
Oh.
And then the other cat will run away from the door when she hears it, because she's not really a people person. She kind of finds them fascinating and will sit at a distance and peer at them.
People, you know,
if it seems quiet enough. But that's it. So yeah, it'd be kind of cool to be able to take my cat for a walk. Why do I get the feeling that I would end up carrying him the entire time?
Right.
So
I just thought it would be kind of nice, like, we could get like a little picnic table, and then if she wants to sit or wants to sit outside and read, we could just have the cat with us. You know, the cat could just enjoy outside while we're just doing something.
Did you see that video with this lady in Los Angeles who rescues like 700 cats at
the
time?
No.
It's like this big outside cat preserve.
Crazy cat people?
Oh, she's not crazy. She's not like, I want to keep them all. She actually, after she got divorced, she had like 6 acres of land. And she was volunteering for these local animal shelters.
Yep.
And she was just taking in cats and dogs. And so there's this video that I saw had just like all these cats lying around. And they were like, it was like a nature preserve. They were outside, they're running around. And the guy who's doing the documentary, who he apparently had just stumbled upon this place by accident once and said, the story must be told. He said, and the amazing thing was it didn't smell at all.
Huh?
Yeah. So it was fascinating.
Didn't smell like for the, cats.
It was kind of a cool video. It's like if you wanted to have your own African safari type place, but only had cats, you could kind of do it if you had the right attitude.
Cat safari.
Yeah.
So coming up, cat safari.
It was pretty cool. It was like it would be like the American version of the cat cafe, except it'd be, you know, Cat West or something like Cat Wild West. You walk around there and just all these cats.
Huh.
And they're also just not kept. They're actually, you know, cycled through.
Yep.
So like if someone adopts one, you know, then they go. So,
that's a lot of cats though.
It's a lot of cats.
That's a lot of cats.
Yeah. I guess if you spread them out, it's not so bad. But it's kind of cool to see them all concentrated in one area.
Cat concentrated.
Yeah. It's kind of the way that the holiday stroll in Nashua is cool, because you see everyone in Nashua on the Main Street. So it's like, wow.
Just a sea of people. And
there's cat backs. Yeah, it's like that.
Sea of ears.
All these people like hanging out, and it's like, where are they the rest of the time? You know?
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of get a glimpse of, this is what it must have been like when Nashua downtown was the place to be. Instead of, you know,
a ghost town.
Yeah.
Not really a ghost town.
It's not really a ghost town, but, you know, like, there's just so many other things in the area.
Yeah.
The mall. I guess the mall is probably the biggest draw, but then the other plazas pull everything apart. There's no centralized section that people just go to.
Yeah. It's kind of funny watching, like, Merrimack's strip malls. We went and had dinner with a friend near the Commons in Merrimack, and it's just, like, it's halfway empty. And then there's another one in Merrimack. It's just totally, like, a whole thing of strip malls is just done, you know, like it was such an 80s and 90s thing, and now they're just these abandoned, like, nobody's in them.
Do you remember if they were really bustling with activity when you were a kid?
Yep, because there was a strawberry in the Shaw's Plaza in Merrimack. There was a Strawberry's Music. So we used to go there all the time to buy music and stuff, and there was always, I mean, the whole every business was in there, and there was a bank and there was a restaurant and just cars all in the parking lot.
Huh. So what changed, you think?
I don't know. It just seems like the quote unquote strip mall is just fallen out of thing. I don't know. Because even the one in Nashua, like Seminole Plaza, there's half the stores there are pretty empty. It just seems like the strip mall as a entity has become passe, and people are moving on to new things. Maybe big box stores have reclaimed.
I guess so. But big box stores exist along a strip. Maybe the strip has replaced the strip mall itself, because like the bigger stores have, you know, they look bigger, they have more treasures inside of them.
Yeah.
So people want to go to the big things to optimize their time.
Maybe Amazon has just killed everything.
Yeah. It could be just a matter of the of the strip mall not offering your typical high quality services. I mean, like, and I think of a strip mall, and I think of the stores in a strip mall. They're usually like the
card stores,
third tier stores. You know, it's not like a really great music
discount
store.
Cards.
Right. You know, like you might, your standards are your Dunkin' Donuts, your Radio Shacks, and then you've got your Dress Barns, and those.
Yeah,
and who goes to those? I mean, that's I've never been in one, so I don't know if they've changed. You know, what sewing shops? Maybe the one or two occasional, like you. Small sandwich places.
Yep.
But you know, never. You know, maybe an Applebee's if it's like a, if it's like starting to push its way into premium retail. Like, I guess you start with an Applebee's.
Applebee's.
But you know, actually, speaking of Seminole Plaza, is that the one that where the where Applebee's is?
No. Seminole Plaza is the one right here in the middle of town where Kentucky Fried Chicken is. Something. It's like Greystone Plaza now or something.
Oh, okay.
I know it as Seminole Plaza because we used to go when the Brandt movie theater was there.
Okay.
$2.01 cinema. Mm-hmm. And so it was just always we just called it the Brandt Plaza, or we would just call it Seminole Plaza. And the comic store used to be.
Oh, that's right.
Various
locations. Yeah, and now that moved to Northeastern
now
Boulevard.
Yeah, they're tucked away over in Northeastern Boulevard.
The up that plaza up where Applebee's is. I guess is that Somerset Plaza or
something.
The DCU is up there, the credit union.
Yep.
Anton's,
the new
Anton branches.
What's that new
market basket? That's actually a really nice market basket. It's everyone still wears the white coats and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but and you know it's a nice place. Like I actually like going there. I usually don't like going to.
Did you say they had the best chicken that you?
They have the best chicken, fried chicken, supermarket fried chicken. If you don't mind it being a little overly salty.
Okay.
Yeah, so you need to have lots of water with it, but it's apparently they don't have it all the time. I tried to go get some the other day, and they had something else. Yeah, so you know, but they have an interesting selection of things.
Huh.
But I've been noticed there's a lot of construction going on up there. They're building something opposite of where the old Market Basket was.
Yes,
that's where Chen Yang Li moved to as well. So it's open.
Oh.
I didn't realize it had opened already.
Huh.
So I need to go and you know check them out.
Okay,
because they were good for a pretty reasonable you know Chinese meal.
Yes.
You know, not well. It's probably the most authentic-y that you can get in this area.
Yeah. Well, the old Market Basket that's over by Bob's, right? And Staples? Is that the one you're talking about?
There's two old Market Baskets.
Oh, okay.
So there was one. Was that a market? There's that one in that plaza that's off of Exit 8, and you go toward, is it Amherst Street? Yeah. Exit 8. You get off at Exit 8 if you're going north, and then you sort of bear to the left, and then you intersect right around where Bertucci's is. That plaza that's on the left. That's the plaza I'm talking about. I think Kmart used to be there.
Sears right. Yep.
Yeah. So that like that plaza. I guess it's two plazas actually.
Oh, that's right. Because they were over on the left, and now they're down on the right.
Yeah. So there's that one that's where. There's that Cedars Cafe, which has that really great chicken garlic wrap.
No.
Oh, that is a good. They have a good chicken garlic wrap. that's where DCU is, and then the plaza that there used to be a Market Basket there, but then they moved across to the other side of the plaza, where I guess Sears or Kmart, one of those things used to be.
Yep.
And they opened up a much nicer store.
Yep.
And the other one, the plaza you're thinking about that has the other Market Basket that closed, is where they're building the Whole Foods.
Right.
That's in the Staples, where Staples and I think AC Moore or something like that is. Yeah, so it's kind of on the other end. That's more toward Exit 7 as opposed to Exit 8.
Very good.
So Chen Yang Li is the one that's closer to Exit 8, that plaza that's next to the plaza that's opposite of the McDonald's.
Okay.
Yep. There's that hotel in the corner, too.
I forget
what it is.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah, so need to try them out.
Huh.
And see how it is.
Just my microphone stand here.
Yep.
I was watching a while back. We had bought the second season of This American Life on DVD. They had a
TV show,
on Showtime.
Yep.
And I didn't want to sit and watch the actual episodes, but I watched a bonus thing that was tagged onto the DVD, and it was a live session, and he was in front of an audience on stage doing the show.
That's great.
And I wanted to mention it because it was really fascinating, because he had all of his little mixing board stuff right in front of him while he was doing it.
Oh.
And just like the gestures he would do, like he would talk like, you know, he's just like, what's his name again? Ira Glass. You know, he'd just be like, this is Ira Glass. You know, he's like, I'm going to do something live here, and you can all watch with me. And you know, he's like, we'll just give it a shot. And he had everything set up, and he'd be like, you know, chapter one, and he would say whatever the title is. And he had one little mixing console that had pre-recorded interviews on a CD, and he would cue it up, and then he had the music over here. And it was fun, kind of fascinating watching him. And I was just like, is that like what he does when he does his real show? Like, is he just do it in one take and he's just kind of doing it? And the thing that had the interviews on it, you could see the CD spinning inside this thing, and there was a big green button.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he would play an interview, he would hit this button. But he did it like he would tap it, and then he would bring his arm up really high.
Yeah.
And he had this whole sort of performance thing that he was doing as he was like, you know, he'd just be like, coming up, and then he would say, beep. And then like, it just was kind of fascinating to watch to watch him work.
Yeah, the flourish is a very important part of the ritual. When I was in grad school getting my MFA, I was one of the lab TAs for some courses.
Yep.
And around that time, we had like really low resolution mice. They were maybe about 150 dpi. Right now they're like 10 times more sensitive. So that means, which means you move the mouse, if you don't adjust your operating system settings, you move the mouse like a tiny little bit, and then the thing flies across the screen.
Yes.
But before then, you would actually have to move the mouse quite a bit to even go across 640 pixels wide.
Yeah.
Because that felt better. And so one thing I had developed as I was doing these things, we were pretty much using the same software all the time, and I would always do the flourish. And then this would... So like I would lift the mouse up, because that's better for your wrists, so you don't end up with a carpal tunnel thing.
Yeah.
Just by moving it. So I'd go... And then, like, go and get the man, boom, boom. And then when I was on it, it would go, bam.
It's like a ninja.
Yeah. And so it was part of the act. And, like, I started doing it when I realized that people were fascinated by how I did this, because it was fast. Like, I was pulling down menu items, and they weren't even completely drawing the menus when I selected the one to draw. So, one of my graphic design teachers, Heinz Klinken.
Heinz.
Who was pretty cool. He used to be a graphic designer for NASA. And he was just watching in fascination, because he's this old school, you know, graphic designer, and he's saying, you're pulling down the menus and selecting them before they draw. And I said, oh, I guess I am. And so I was just like doing something for him, and he was just going whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. And so like I had this tendency, and other people had commented on that, like when I would do something that would be a finishing move. I would do the same kind of gesture.
You would do a
like,
little flourish,
bam,
and your hand would come up in the air.
Done. Saved. And that's how we do it downtown. You know, so I kind of miss that now.
Awesome.
I've gotten back to it a little bit when I realized that my mouse settings were had not been adjusted to keep the same motions. So, like, I have my mouse sensitivities adjusted way low. This is one reason why I didn't want to use the Macintosh for the longest time, because they have this crap mouse control.
Oh.
You can't turn off the acceleration, so it throws off the gesture. The gesture I have practiced for many years, and it's because I can't turn off mouse acceleration, because Steve Jobs didn't like it.
Steve Jobs.
They kept actually finding ways of taking it out, because people were working around it.
Huh.
And so it's just irritating, these jags. You know, so it's like, no, we don't want you to use mouse. We want you to see Steve Jobs as mouse acceleration, because he is deemed it holy.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Jags.
Jags.
Anyway, I digress.
So you went to Ribfest this weekend, and I want to get your input on Ribfest, because I've never been, and I know initially you were a little let down on what Ribfest is.
Well...
And it's a yearly thing that they have here in Merrimack. I have to play my little sound bite here. Just...
Well, I don't think anyone heard that, because I don't think you plugged it in.
Oh, I didn't plug it in. Oh, all right. So... Well, never mind. It was Homer Simpson. But so you went to Ribfest. So tell me your experiences on what you thought.
Well, I've been three times now. The first time I went... I was going with a bunch of other single guys who thought, like, we should get together as men, and we should, like, you know, like, be a band of men on the prowl, and, like, meet women, and be awesome. And so I tried this once or twice, and it was, you know, just a bunch of sad men sitting at the picnic table, and it was not very cool.
Scoping them all out.
Yeah, the one interesting thing I took away from that was like one of the guys saying, "Dude, the way you walked back from that rib place, you should walk like that all the time. It's like, it looks like you know what you're doing and you're in charge."
You said, owned it.
And I guess I was just like, I am going to eat these ribs. I am going to taste the heck out of them. That's what I was thinking. And I guess the determination came out. So I didn't go for a number of years. And then my sister and her boyfriend knew one of the acts that was playing last year's.
Oh.
And so then they were playing late at night. Like, they had like the 8 or 9 o'clock slot.
Yep.
And so they wanted to know if I wanted to go to the Rib Fest and check this out, since they were going to be in town that weekend anyway.
Yeah.
So I said, it's worth checking out like once, and it'll be good like to spend some time doing something different, you know, with my sister and her boyfriend. So we went, and it was actually kind of a good time, because I just took my time and I tried I went to the big rib stands. They had these like 3 or 4 story tall signs.
Yeah,
they're all around.
Yeah,
and so I would go and I would try like a 3-pack ribs and like taste them and think about it and say like, do I like these ribs? Are these? How would I want my ribs to be in comparison? So I went to like 4 or 5 different ones. And if you go like after the lunch rush, there's not a lot of waiting.
Okay,
around lunch, you know, it's just crazy.
Right.
And we just hung out, and there was all these things I'd seen. It's the interesting thing about Rib Fest is it's a local, pretty much a local festival. So you see local businesses.
Yeah,
you get to talk to the local business people, and they're trying to make things. Like there's this one pickle place that's, I think it's Scoops Pickles. I'd favorited them on Facebook, and so there's a bunch of guys, some guys in Merrimack said, "We love pickles. We're going to make great pickles." And so I've been just kind of monitoring. I was like, "These guys make pickles," and I had some of the samples there, and they were good pickles.
Fresh
packed pickles, and they were good. And they were in Merrimack, and I wanted to support them.
Huh.
And there was this other company that ground up tree stumps into wood starter stuff.
Oh, okay.
So I guess the tree stumps have a lot of resin or something in them that makes them like really good kindling.
Huh.
So you could buy these bags and stuff. And there's some local guys who like were doing this stuff. So that's what I like about it. It's a Rotary Club. It's people coming together. It's just, so there's that vibe that's there. I really like that.
Yep.
It's kind of a long walk from the parking lot, but they've got the shuttles going.
Yeah,
it's pretty well organized. But this is the first year that I went to go to the Taste of Rib Fest, which I've heard about last year. And the Taste of Rib Fest is my impression of it was that there was a rib competition, and then there would be a number of entrants, and they would be providing the ribs also to people who paid for a $30 tasting ticket, and which has like a limit of 100 people per session, and there's like 2 sessions only on Friday.
Huh.
So I went and got this thing. I said, okay, I'm finally going to taste like some competition ribs. I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast, but I've been really going and trying a lot of different rib places in the area to see what I like and what I don't like, because I want to make my own excellent ribs or just know where to go.
Yeah.
So I've been trying a bunch of different places. So I thought, okay, here's some serious ribbers. Fine, I get to taste their handiwork.
Here we go.
And so it was interesting. So, it was a typical kind of, organized thing. The sign wasn't in the right place. The people up front said go all the way down, and you would go all the way down, and you weren't sure where the tent was or where the tasting was. But they realized that, and they fixed it. And so there's all these people. There's maybe 50, 60 people that are there. It had not sold out this year. It was also raining that day. During the taste.
Okay.
And so I went in there, and there's some people pretty excited about having some ribs, you know. Serious, the people who were willing to pay $30 to taste these ribs, and the people were coming in, there were these chafing dishes with water in them ready to hold these ribs, and we're going to get some ribs and some wings from each one of these 6 stations.
Okay.
One of them that actually apparently hadn't shown up because of traffic issues, and so they were down one, and so they said, okay, They just got in, and we'll have people come back for that last one so they can do the voting. The voting, you have your tasting ticket, and you write down what your favorite one is. And so there's styrofoam containers that has the name of the competitor on them.
Yep.
And they load them up, and then you can bring them all back to the seating area under the eating tent in the middle of the fairground. and or rather the middle of Anheuser-Busch's giant field. And so I'm there, and I'm taking pictures of each box, each ribs, taking notes, and you know, ruling things out. So this and that, this and that. And so I went back to get the last one, because I figured they might be done. I could get that last sixth one so I could, you know, judge it.
Yeah.
Even though it was maybe a little bit unfair because they were late.
Yeah.
And so I was asking the woman there, and she said, I don't know. And then I also had a question, because the first entrant only had chicken wings. They did not have ribs. So I wonder if that disqualified them from the voting. So if you're going to be in, you know, if you're going to be the best barbecue at Ribfest,
Ribfest, where we don't actually have ribs with us.
Yeah. Well, they had good wings, but I thought, you know, probably they didn't meet the conditions of the competition.
Right.
And so I was taking this race. I had my notebook out, and everyone was going like, wow, you write down that gummy. So I had like X'd out certain entries, like, because they had failed. Like on some level.
Wow.
Like one was like a little bit undercooked, you know, or it was a little bit more undercooked for my liking. It was a little bit more on the gelatinous side, slightly. It could have benefited from like another 5 degrees of heat.
Okay.
And then there was one that was just inconsistently seasoned. So there was like, it tasted good in this part, but this part wasn't seasoned. Or this, and there was one that was not, the meat had not been actually marinated and done anything to it. So it was meat, which is fine. But then there was just salt on top of it that was just spots of salt. It was like, it seemed like these are kind of ribs that, you know, anyone are making. Yeah. I'm not seeing any sign of long smoke, and I'm seeing smoke rings, and I'm not seeing any of this stuff. And so I'm mentioning to this, and then, like, the woman who I'm talking to, like, you know, calls over someone else and asks a question, like, so the entrant number one didn't have this. Did entrant number five come back? And then the woman who was, I guess, the representative, said, like, confided, well, this is not a, it's not a, it's more of a casual competition, she said. And what happened was, like, number five couldn't make it, so number one and number, so everyone else pitched in to make ribs and extra chicken to cover for it.
Wow.
And what our goal was is for everyone would get between 10 and 12 pieces of meat. And so I was going, okay, so this
is not really about a competition at all.
Yeah, so you still could vote on it. And it kind of made sense, because I'm up there and I'm asking people, where are you from? Are you local? Do you have a restaurant? And the impression I got is these weren't serious competitors. I mean, there was a little bit of that, and they were kind of putting on kind of that vibe.
Yep.
Like, oh, so-and-so's out from so-and-so. But I think it was... I'm not sure it was a real competition. There were a bunch of local guys who loved to make ribs, and they volunteered for this to make essentially what was a big rib taste dinner in the context of it.
Yeah.
There were none of the people out on the actual field who were selling ribs to the public were in that tent. So they weren't competing. And so that's kind of the impression I thought. Like, maybe I would get to see people who have these three-story signs saying, we won this, we won this, we won this.
Yeah,
we travel all over the country.
Exactly. You would think, like, this is like our ribs, we're going to kick your ass.
Yeah. It was really more of like a big kind of communal barbecue kind of thing.
Like a big family reunion.
Yeah. They provided, the committee had provided all the meat themselves. Which is fine, but like, because I mentioned like that first group had not had provided ribs.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the quest for amazing ribs continues.
That's too bad that the local Rotary couldn't at least add a little bit of like bring in like the top five. Like I want you know
I bet it'd be difficult. Like I'm sure it was hard to find people to commit to cooking ribs for 200 people.
Yeah.
Like, this is kind of an all day thing, you know. It's for a good cause, though. That's what I told myself.
Huh.
So we will just have to make them ourselves.
I wonder if they do that taco thing up in Manchester the same way.
I don't know. I've never been to the taco thing.
I don't know. We'll have to
find
talk
someone
about that a different time.
Okay.
But all right, well, I guess we're gonna wrap it up. That was a quick 30 minutes.
Yep.
Until next week, eat good ribs. Enjoy good weather. We're going to have beautiful weather for this Saturday's workshop, which is exciting.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yes. So, all right. Well, we'll see you next week then. Until next week, I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And designer Dave Say.
And we will see you all later. Music provided by Michael Bellar and the As Is Ensemble. Visit him at michaelbellar.com. Check out his concert dates on his website. MichaelBelar.com. Go see him in a show. Bam! Everybody have a good week.
Yo.
We'll see you later.
Take care.
Goodbye, 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 goodbye. I'm going to eat some lunch.